Welcome to the Reading for Success podcast, a production of Success League Radio. This podcast focuses on customer success and leadership books, provides an overview of each, and gives you an honest assessment of whether or not they are worth your time. Welcome to the podcast. Hi, I'm Kristen Hayer.
And I'm Russell Bourne, and we're the co-hosts of Reading for Success. And we also both work for the Success League, a boutique customer success consulting and training firm based in San Francisco.
And today we're reviewing an article called Leadership in a Politically Charged Age. It's written by business school professors Noor Taley and Eli Finkel, who respectively research intergroup conflict and intimate relations at Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management. You can find it in the July-August 2022 edition of Harvard Business Review magazine. So let's dive in. Russell, can you give us an overview of the article?
Sure. So this article is broken into a few sections. There's a pretty long introductory section that gives a couple examples of companies who found themselves in really hot water because of political discourse becoming public, one of which was Basecamp. The intro also goes on to talk about a couple of psychological concepts that the authors dive into. So the two are motivated reasoning, which is the act of selecting only the facts that support your own worldview. And then the other term that they use is naive realism. And that's when a person interprets evidence differently than someone else might interpret it because of their ideology. And then they view that perception as the singular truth. And then they wrap it up by talking about how we're all, you know, eligible to fall into these thought patterns. So yeah, we all bring our own biases. And then the second half of the article is basically some actionable advice about things companies can do, given all of the above. And so they talk about how to use an employee onboarding time to set ground rules and maybe avoid some political conflicts. And then they say that it's going to happen anyway. And so they give some advice about how to handle it. So I would love to hear what the highlights were for you.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a really interesting, very timely article. I think one of my favorite quotes in the article is, "We don't see things as they are, we see things as we are." And I think that underlines all of the philosophies that they're talking about in the early part of the article, where they really get into how, you know, you can be looking at the same set of facts and see things really differently based on your own perceptions and beliefs. And so they're highlighting the fact that, I think this was another interesting thing for me, is that because of the shift in generations and the expectations of what work is to older generations versus younger generations that are coming into the workforce, the importance of bringing your whole self to work has become increased over time. And the youngest generations, so that would, I think right now, be Gen Z coming into the workplace, they find it really important to bring themselves to work. And so yourself is all the things that you believe in, and your political views and your personal preferences. And so all of that is coming into work now in a way that is really different than it has been in the past, where, you know, you were encouraged to just bring your work self to work, and that's sort of it. So I think I liked how they highlighted that generational difference as well. And then I think my favorite part of the article, where they start to get into what can you do about all of this, is they had an example. It's from a digital marketing firm called Harman Brothers. This is toward the end of the article, that talked about what they did to try to keep political dialogue in the workplace, but make people be more responsible for things that they're saying. So employees can post whatever political content they wish, but they must pair it with a video in which they explain their thoughts about what they've posted. And anyone who wants to respond has to do the same. And that's sort of allowing for political discourse inside of the workplace, but doing it in a way where it's not sort of trolls, you know, sort of snarking at each other. And it takes away the, you know, the privacy of, you know, being able to write a comment about somebody's post without any consequences. And it sort of brings it around to a place where, you know, it's out in the open what people believe, and it turns it into more of a polite discourse. So I thought that was a fantastic idea. I don't know, what did you think?
Yeah, I loved that example. I thought that was really a nice way to force people to support what they're saying.
Yeah.
So a couple things stood out to me. Number one is the part about how everyone needs to be aware of your own cognitive biases. And in that employee onboarding section, they talk about teaching people about these concepts of motivated reasoning and naive realism, and really hammering home that everybody is susceptible to that. I have to admit that as I was reading this article, I was checking myself and thinking to myself, well, yeah, the other people who don't have the same opinion as me, they're the ones who need to be aware of this stuff, right? But it's both.
Yeah.
So I think that's so important. And I think that video example that you just brought up is a great way to, again, cause people to think about where they're coming from and then observe where others are coming from. The other really cool example of something that a company did that they brought up was about hiring for diversity. And I think that some people think there's a hiring diversity problem and some people don't. And so if you try to have some sort of a company initiative to improve your diversity, the people who are behind that initiative believe that a more diverse work team is a stronger work team because it's more well-rounded. And it's hard to get people on board if they don't think that there's a diversity problem. And so they focused on, well, where's the common ground? So the thing that we could all agree on, no matter what we think about diversity, is that we would like to have the people in our company who are the strongest at their jobs, right? Everybody would agree with that. And then if you are pro-diversity, something that you could ask someone who doesn't see the problem is, okay, well, if we agree that we want the best and brightest working at our company, how do we make sure that we're reaching all of those potential candidates in the biggest pool possible? And by definition, the answer to that has to be that you need to reach all of these diverse groups.
Yeah, I think that there were a lot of really interesting examples around diversity in this article. That was a big part of what they brought in as a number of the examples. And I really liked that because I think that's one of the most practical places where political beliefs can enter the workforce. It's an area that gets a lot of attention. Was there anything you didn't like about it?
You know, I loved this article overall. The only thing that I'll say is that we are in a little bit of a post-fact world right now. It yeah. used to be that political disagreements were about opinions, right? Like,
yeah.
For example, you know, maybe someone thinks that people should have the right to euthanasia and someone else doesn't. And that's an opinion debate. Right now, we're in a fact debate where some people engage in political discourse that's just blatantly not true.
Yeah.
Like I can give, you know, the easy example that's on everybody's mind right now is, were Dominion's election machines hacked?
Yeah.
Right. No, they weren't. There's no evidence. If someone wants to come forward with evidence, please do. But despite that, there are just people who believe it. I don't quite know how to get around that. I think the article is all about opinions and how you can navigate opinions. I don't know how this quite applies to someone who just is parroting something that's, you know, quantifiably not true.
Yeah, I think that definitely was missing. I think the thing that really kind of struck me is that, you know, in the second part of the article where they're talking about, well, how do you solve these problems? They got into the area of having people with differing opinions mutually problem solving. It sounds really great in an article. And I kept wondering as I was reading through it, and I actually wrote this down in the margin, does this really work? Because I think to your point, when there are some things that are sort of this post-fact facts, I use it quote unquote facts, that people are believing in that just don't really have a basis in reality, I think that it would be hard to execute on some of these, you know, ideas that the authors have about how to actually put this into place and have it work. Because I think there are some things that are just true and not true. And, you know, even if you're doing your best to try to work with somebody who doesn't share your opinion about something, you know, there are still facts that come into play. So I kind of questioned the execution portion of this. I thought actually the best part of the execution portion was how to teach people when they're coming in the door about your company norms and standards, and also how to think about these differences in opinions. I think the second part of the execution, which is sort of like what to do after, they're already onboarded and you're running into some of these political differences in your company, I think that seemed less realistic to me.
I agree. I mean, we live in a world where we feel like onboarding is one of the biggest turning points in a customer relationship. And that's true for employees too. But once the cat's out of the bag, it's quite a bit tougher. The other thing I'll say that I wish the article would have addressed, and maybe these guys can expand on it at some point. I mentioned there's a little bit of a but both sides feel type to this article. And I feel like we all have an equal right to express ourselves, but it doesn't make the arguments equally valid. And that's, especially in a post-fact world, that's a big problem. So can anybody just say anything and it gets the proper attention and it goes through this process that they're proposing that companies use? No, because then there's no end to the craziness, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do think one point they make that is valid along those lines is that this stuff takes time and the process is really important. So if you want to be persuasive with somebody who, believes very differently than you do, that takes time and there's a process to doing that. And it's important to do that. So even if it's not compellingly true, the thing that the other person believes, it is important to work through it with them. And I thought they made that point really well in the latter part of the article. But, because working through it, even if it is, sort of a lie or crazy, it's still part of having a relationship with somebody who you work with, I think.
Yeah. And that's what you just said is kind of the saving grace is that, if there's someone who's just not dealing in facts, like who's just falsifying stuff, we can't just cast those people off and disregard, right? We've got to try something to bring them back to reality. And so maybe the authors can't say that in this article, but this process is the process. It's maybe step one of doing that. And it takes time.
Yeah, it does. And so anyway, bottom line, do you think the article's worth reading?
Yeah, absolutely. This is just such an important part of our society right now. And like you said, people bring their whole selves to work and you have to address it. It's happening whether or not you address it. So you have
to. Yeah. I think to sweep it under the rug is to just make it worse. And so I agree with you. I think this article is absolutely worth a read. You may, if you're reading it, not pull away, like the whole article may not apply to you or your company. If you have a smaller organization, you may have hired people that have a tendency to believe exactly like you do. So this may seem less relevant, but I think anyone can pull at least one or two tips out of this article on things they could do differently or better to help people who have diverse opinions on their team understand each other better. Well, Russell, thanks for chatting with me about this article.
Yeah, this was a great one. I think this was your find. So well done. I loved this one and I loved the conversation.
I liked it too. Reading for Success is a part of Success League Radio, a podcast channel focused on customer success. We encourage you to check out the other shows on our channel. Innovations in Leadership features in-depth interviews with CS leaders, and we have a new show in collaboration with Gainsight called CS Essentials. Reading for Success also features author interviews from time to time. And over the coming year, we plan to introduce other shows that provide helpful ideas and content to customer success professionals and leaders.
If you enjoyed Reading for Success, I'd like to ask you for a favor. Share our show on social media. Help us get the word out to the CS community. And ultimately, we want to continue to produce great content. And so to do that, we need the support of our amazing customer success colleagues. And with that, we're going to say goodbye for this week.
Bye, Russell. And to everybody else, thanks for listening. And we hope you'll join Reading for Success next time.